I'm Helen Chickering with BPR News. Throughout the day, we've been hearing about the life of noted astrophysicist Stephen Hawking, who died today, a day that just happens to be Albert Einstein's birthday, and also Pi Day, 314, which is Pi, a coincidence that could be a story on its own. But for now, we'll focus on Pi. Yesterday, I sat down with UNCA math professor Sam Kaplan to talk about why Pi gets a day and why, for many of us, math in general feels intimidating and out of reach.
Pi. Pi's everywhere. So pi is a fundamental ratio between the diameter of a circle and the distance around a circle. So the reason pi, I think, shows up as an important date is an opportunity to remind the community that mathematics plays an important role in our daily life, whether we are aware of it or not. It sits inside all of the kinds of mechanical solutions that are required for a car to work, for our cool little electronics and our cell phone. Pi is 3.14 approximately, so March 14th became attached to Pi Day. But it is a moment also, I think, for us to find a way through activities, through reading, to connect back to a moment earlier in our lives when math was very concrete and hands-on, and we really love mathematics and discovery. There are some people as adults who still hold that. But for many people, if you go and talk to them, they'll tell you they're one of those people that don't do math. They can't do math. You dig a little deeper, as I have in hundreds of conversations. And it goes back to a moment in the fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, when they were no longer the fastest person in class for multiplication, or a teacher embarrassed them, or some uncle told them, girls don't do math, or they felt inadequate in some way because it was the first time that they had to struggle with material. So maybe they did great in geometry, and then in algebra they saw Descartes' rule of signs to try to figure out the number of roots in a polynomial, and like, oh, I just never got it, so I'm just not one of those math people. It's an opportunity on Pi Day to remind ourselves that math is not a talent. It is a skill, and like any skill, requires practice, patience, and persistence so that when you make mistakes, you question them, poke them, and learn from them so that you can improve, just like if you wanted to be great at basketball. You would start off, you wouldn't be able to shoot very well. When you got it great, you'd say, what did I do right to get it in? When you get used to getting in and you miss it, what can I do to get better? You'd have, right? We don't treat math as a skill, but it is. The math department used to set up little booths at Bell Share. And I'd be out there with some undergraduates, and we would just have hands-on activities for kids to make boxes, and we'd make paper sculpture and all kinds of fun things. And the parents would come right to the edge of the tent, but they wouldn't walk all the way in because that was too traumatic. So that's why I had undergraduates there, so I could go out and talk to the parents. And they would tell me these stories one after another, and it was just heartbreaking to me. And I'd say, well, what do you do for a living? Oh, I keep books for business. And just a minute ago, they told me they couldn't do math, and they're so glad that their kids love math, and they hope that that continues, but they can't help them with their homework and so on.
I guess that points to how intimidating math can be.
Absolutely, because a lot of things that we do, we don't think of as being math. When you get up in the morning, you don't just put on clothes haphazardly. Some things come before other things. And that's called a partial ordering, and there's a whole area of mathematics about lattice theory and partial ordering. And you already have those intuitions. So the mathematics that's generated even at a high level, people who do that mathematics always have something concrete, an experience or a picture in their head that they're building from. We have all kinds of experiences that we can build from. It's a matter of going back and learning some of the language in mathematics and recognizing, oh, I do math all the time when I'm planning things out, figuring out how long things will take, reading a time chart for a bus. And it's also an opportunity to go back. There's a lot of popular books now about mathematics. There's even a cool website on mathematics and literature. And so you're like, oh, I love to watch movies. Well, you can go to this website, and it will have the mathematical content reviews of a wide variety of movies. And so now you can go watch all your favorite movies and look for the cool formula on the board or a key idea related to chaos. Right? Or go back and read books, short stories that are not necessarily science fiction that contain gems around mathematics and mathematical ideas. And then there's tons of books on what are called numeracy or innumeracy. Innumeracy is like illiteracy. It's the inability to process and communicate quantitative information. And yet, when our doctors talk to us about treatments, about surgery, there's always the discussion of risk. And if you don't understand basics around probability, that's an empty conversation. So what do you rely on? You rely on, oh, Uncle Joe had that surgery you said is so safe, but it took him months to recover and it was super painful. I don't think so. When in fact, all of the research would suggest that you have a high chance of being successful with that treatment. So we rely on anecdote instead of science. And so we make poor decisions for ourselves. It comes up again when we talk about health and health decisions, being able to read a label. So it might say something about salt, and it might have a number, and it might have another number. Well, one of those might be a percentage. 33% of your daily recommended allowance is, you know, in this product versus how many grams of salt. And being able to keep track of protein, carbohydrates, and other mineral content and nutrition requires a tremendous amount of numeracy. And if you're already doing that, then you're better at math than you seem to maybe say about yourself. And if you would like to be better at doing that, you need to also improve at math.
So let's talk about Math Club.
So UNCA Asheville, the math department, and UNCA Foundation jointly are hosting our next, it'll be our second Pi Run. It's right after Pi Day. Pi Day is March 14th. The Pi Run is on Sunday, March 18th, because more families can come out to participate on a Sunday. In the afternoon, starting at Pi o'clock, 3:14 p.m., we'll be on the Strauss track and here at UNC Asheville. And it's a 5K fun run. 5K is almost exactly Pi miles. So if you have Pi floating all over the place, we will actually, at the end of the run, have Pi available, P-I-E, to eat for people to enjoy. We'll have tables out with all sorts of activities and information to learn more about. Marvelous Math Club is a collaboration between the math department at UNCA, public housing, and Asheville City Schools. From Asheville City Schools, Marta Akala-Williams, who is the director for Parent U and is the parent outreach coordinator, and I go to Pisgah View. Pisgah View invited us years ago to have a math presence at the apartments, and they've given us space. We invite any of the elementary school kids who live at Pisgah View to come join us to celebrate mathematics every Monday from 3 to 5. And we are using mathematics as a catalyst to build community and to build leadership skills. When any of those kids walk in the door, they're members of a club. They're not participants in a program. They're not part of some project or an experiment. They're members of the club. They own that club. When they walk in, they are a math leader. We don't say, oh, if you do this, you'll eventually be a leader. You are a leader. And then all of the language is asset-based language. And if there's some sort of friction, we say, are you showing your best leadership right now? Right? Is that how we exhibit leadership? And it begins just with snack and people sharing about their day so they can let go of anything that might be in their way from that previous 8 hours or so at school, something yucky, and then talk about something yummy. Aunt so-and-so just had a baby, or I got on the honor roll, or I got 100 on this quiz, or something. And we all celebrate that. Then we spend about another hour. Everybody breaks into groups, depending on what their interest is. If they want to work on homework, we provide resources for them to do their homework, including some undergraduates of the math department supplies, helps pay for, but also we have folks from housing who participate and a teacher from Asheville City School who comes. And we also have volunteers in the community. Now, technically, we don't have any volunteers. We have math champions who come and participate and engage. So sometimes we have enough champions that we have one or two of our members working with one champion. They might be doing fractions or playing some math game, working on decimals, doing flashcards. We might have them break into pairs and work on cards or other exercises with each other to strengthen their skills in mathematics. Even if they're playing a game like Moncala, which is a fun game with little stones, they take turns asking each other math questions before they make their move. Right? So the math questions would be on grade level 2, so if they're second graders, they might ask what's, 12 and 20. And the other one has to answer. The first one has to know that that's the correct answer or not. And then they get to move and then goes back and forth so that they're always reinforcing math as part of community. Math becomes adhered to friendship and support community and leadership. And it is my hope that as they travel through middle school and high school, when they come up against moments that they didn't get something right away, or somebody tries to embarrass them, they'll say, "But I'm a math leader. I can get through this." And they'll have that sense of confidence in themselves as a person, not just with math, but every challenge they face. And what we hear from the teachers is over and over and over that these math leaders for Marvelous Math Club really want to not just engage, but make a difference in their classroom. They want everyone to succeed at mathematics because that's what we do in Marvelous Math Club. We support each other. And it is so wonderful. Then at the very end, the last half hour, we all just gather in a room and we'll say, "How did you demonstrate leadership today?" And now it's on them to say, "Oh, I finished my homework and we played some outside and I reminded the bigger kids not to squish the little kids when we're playing with the football. And so-and-so is new here. I brought them from my class and they've never logged on before, so I showed them how to log on in the computer lab and made sure that they got started with iReady, which is a software they use at Asheville City Schools." Then we go around the room. Who else saw so-and-so being a leader? Now their peers are pointing out things that maybe they didn't think about as being a demonstration of leadership or didn't realize anyone noticed. And you can just see them sitting taller in their chair. And so when they leave at the end of the day, at the end of 2 hours, everyone has been celebrated. And I think it just makes such a difference. And that's what I hear from them after 2 years. That's what I hear from teachers. And it's just wonderful to be a part of that and to have UNCA plugged in to this club, this effort to make a real difference in people's lives, where they live, not taking them far away, running into the barrier of transportation, running into the barrier of money, but where they live, their home. When we're there as math champions to support them, we are their guests. I think it makes a real difference in the dynamics and helps us really be successful day to day and week to week.
And along with leadership skills, it really also feels like you're honing in on that math intimidation factor that we all, that so many of us struggle with that we talked about earlier. That is just making math part of their everyday tapestry instead of this thing that you feel like you have to conquer.
Right. So it takes away mathematics from hours and hours and hours of just going through worksheets or this thing that you might dread. It also takes away mathematics from this notion of elitism, that only the top two or three fastest math folks in the class will get some sort of recognition or title or certificate and sent off somewhere, or that somehow mathematics only belongs to people who have additional resources. Mathematics really belongs to everyone. Unless you really believe that, it's hard to stay involved and engage with kids at any level of mathematics. Certainly as a child, I noticed my peers would sometimes give up and they would sort of disappear and get tracked into a lower course. And some of my peers would persist, and that the persistence really made a difference. And that persistence came from the idea that mathematics belongs to me. And if everybody treated mathematics just like we treat language and literature, belongs to all of us, it would make such a huge difference, I think, in our problem solving, our ability to comprehend the world around us, and add so much depth, I think, to our experience of the world.
So how did you come to this view, or I guess, or for that matter, what connected you to math in the first place?
All right. Well, so at the beginning of the biography, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up in Western North Carolina in a very small town called Valdez. The people who settled that town were a religious minority called the Waldensians, and education is very central to their theology. And so not only was I getting feedback from my parents that education is important, I was in a school system that believed that education was important. So I think that's part of it, is the notion that education should belong to everyone. And when I was growing up, my parents were a little older. We never left town. They ran a store. Things were always busy. And so as a kid, I dreamed, oh, wouldn't it be great to be able to travel a lot? And I thought math would be perfect for that, because mathematics is a language that's spoken everywhere in the world. And I wouldn't have to necessarily master Chinese and Japanese or Hindi in order to have meaningful interaction with people anywhere. And that has proved to be the case. And when I was 12, I decided to be a math professor, and I have no idea why. I had never met a professor of any kind, let alone a math professor. I was good at math, and I loved math, but that's not necessarily a strong enough reason to decide. One thing, though, that was very helpful was reading a book called 1-2-3 Infinity by George Gamow, who tried to write a book surveying 20th century mathematics for children. And it's a terrible book for children. However, I suffered through, and what I got out of that book more than anything was that mathematics was so much larger than I was being exposed to in school, that it included the notion of studies of shape, which is called topology, studies of large numbers, including the notions not only of infinity, but different sizes of infinity. And I decided that I would eventually study everything in the book. And so there was a moment in my junior year when I celebrated at the end of the semester, because that was the last class that I took to cover all the contents of 1-2-3 Infinity, which was a topology course, a graduate level topology course. It was so much fun. And of course, by then you're somewhat hooked, I guess. But I grew up broadly with the idea that education belongs to everyone. I knew my very best friend was from a poor family. They didn't really have much in the way of wealth, but that didn't stop him from being brilliant and successful in education and so on. And so later when I was in college and certainly in graduate school and would hear attitudes of somebody's from a poor family and so on, so they have no chance of being successful at math, I already had counterexamples to that and had no buy-in. Even when I was in college, I remember being invited to and refusing to participate in math competitions, because math shouldn't be competitive. It should be cooperative, because math belongs to everyone. And then more recently, how this evolved at Piscaview is that Marta Akala-Williams invited me to speak to parents about math, that she gets a lot of questions from her interaction with parents. How do I help my child with their math homework? It doesn't look like what I studied in school at all. So I put together a talk on how to help your child with math homework, which boils down to reflecting to your child, so that when they have a problem, you say, okay, can you read the problem out loud to me to make sure that they understand it? What do each of the terms mean? Do they know what the definitions are? Very often, problems will solve themselves once they realize, oh, this is about a triangle, or this is about a cube or something, and they can draw a picture and get it done. Then, have you ever seen a problem like this before? Can we take these numbers, which are like four-digit numbers, and just pretend instead of 5,406, we just say 6, and this other number we'll just call 2. If we were to make the numbers smaller, can we understand? So simplify the problem a bit. And then once you understand how to do it with the smaller numbers, figure out what the process was, and then go back and do a larger number. So anyway, there's a long set of strategies for parents. One of the places where I gave this talk was at Piscaview, and at the end of it, some of the parents came up afterwards and asked, can we have math at Piscaview? And I was not going to let that opportunity go away. So I found a little bit of money, found some undergraduates, and we set up tutoring. So talk to the parents, when do you want this resource available? They said Monday afternoons. Great. So we had essentially a tutoring center, not unlike this, where kids could just drop in if they have some questions and get their questions answered and head back out. Two or three would come every week. And at the end of a year, Marta Williams and I sat down. We saw, maybe about 15 to 20 kids came. How could we get them to come every week? And then that was the conscious strategy to say, well, who wants to come to tutoring, right? People want to come to a club. And then that's really how it started to evolve, is that the kids started coming. And we said, great, what can we do with this? We have kids in one place thinking about math. Let's build community. And then the community, the leadership, the asset base, are all asset-based language, are all strategies to really help knit mathematics into their lives, as well as other things that are so meaningful.
And proceeds from the upcoming Pi Run will help further that effort?
So any proceeds, we're asking for small donations if you're participating in the 5K, the Pi Run. And all the money from that will go to support our math outreach efforts in the math department, including Marvelous Math Club.
I feel like there's so many stories here, but we've got to wrap up. Anything else you want to add about Pi, about math?
I would be remiss in this opportunity not to share what many mathematicians consider the most beautiful equation in all of mathematics. It's e to the I pi plus 1 equals 0. E is a constant that comes out of Euler's work. I actually put my hands on the original paper one time when I was at Harvard. It's from something he wrote having to do with ballistics, and he needed to name a constant, and the first constant in this paper is A, and the second one's B, and the third one's C, and so on. This is the fifth constant in that paper, but he kept using it in other papers, and it became this standard notation for this constant, and it's something that shows up very early on in calculus. So if you go and you study calculus, you'll be forced to deal with this E. Then I is the square root of minus 1. As soon as you start dealing with, really, algebra, cubic equations and higher, and you can write down the solution to a cubic equation. Cardano came up with that towards the end of the Renaissance. You would have to, for sometimes, in a cubic equation, carry around a little square root of a negative number, which didn't make any sense in thinking about area. So geometrically, it didn't make sense. And if you carried out the computation just pretending like it's okay and it's bookkeeping, you would always end up with a correct answer and it would vanish again. And then again, Euler is involved, who thought about the geometry of something called complex numbers, which are combinations of real and imaginary. So the square root of negative 1 shows up again. And used it not only to solve interesting problems in geometry, but are critical to solving really basic differential equations if you want to understand something like an electrical circuit. So pi shows up in geometry. So we have E, which is calculus, I, which comes from algebra, pi, which comes from geometry, zero, which was an invention, a human invention to talk about nothingness and as a placeholder, and then one, which is something.
That's UNCA math professor Sam Kaplan. I'm Helen Chickering with BPR News.